Welcome to CAMS Cops Our Stories, the podcast series that delves into the unseen world of policing. In this episode, we're joined by DC Charlie Mitten from the Force's Child Abuse Investigation and Safeguarding Unit, who talks about the investigation into a highly manipulative and dangerous paedophile who preyed on young girls through social media. A warning at the start of this episode that it contains discussions some listeners may find upsetting or difficult to listen to.
Tell me a little bit really about what you do day to day. Give us like an example day for you.
Oh God.
So we obviously get loads of investigations that get allocated to us. And you literally could have anything. You could have an assault on a child by a family member to then a rape. It literally can go from something quite small, obviously, and escalate quite quick. We work with like partner agencies, so we work with like the MASH, social care, schools and things like that. And if, for example, someone does a referral at a school and they've got concerns about a child, then it obviously gets escalated from that to social care. And then we get involved and there'll be like a strat and they'll make basically an outcome, whether it would be a Section 17, which is just a single agency, where it would just be social care intervention, or they'll decide that it's a Section 47 and they need police. It would be a joint, so police and social care. So then we would go out and speak to the children and basically build up a bit of a rapport with them and find out what's happened. We at the moment, it's quite busy. We're getting a lot. So juggling, obviously, your live jobs that come in and your ongoing investigations can be quite hard, but... Yeah, it's a full-on job, but it's great. It is absolutely great.
Very worthwhile, I'd imagine.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Good. And so narrowing it down to a specific case now, so tell us about Kevin Brock and how he first came to the attention of yourselves.
So a bit of background, really. Obviously, Kevin Brock, he has just been... obviously jailed for 32 years, and it all began because in February 2022, victim's mum come forward saying that she'd found some messages on her daughter's phone that she wasn't obviously quite happy about. There was indications that something was going on. Bear in mind, this young girl was under 13, and she... these messages were very not appropriate that you would send to a 13-year-old. And she come forward to the police to say, there's something going on, I'm not quite happy. It got allocated to me, and obviously that's when the investigation began. I downloaded victim's phone and saw there was over 1,000 messages between Kevin Brock and the victim. And... he was basically grooming her, saying he would buy her lots of things, he would take her places. And then there was like comments being made in the messages about, we don't have to do what we did last night, we can just cuddle, I can wait till you're 18, I love you, and things like that, which are really inappropriate messages to send to a child. So then I obviously interviewed Kevin Brock the first time and said to him, obviously, put all these messages to him. And he said that it wasn't meant in the way that he said, basically. He's saying that that she was a friend and that he did love her, but as a friend, and there was nothing more to it. And he said that he could see how the messages would come across, but he just said that's how he talks to most girls. But I knew deep down that there's something wasn't right. So myself looked into it even more and more, and there just was something just wasn't sitting right with me, and I couldn't figure out what it was. I downloaded his mobile phone, which was seized originally, and found indecent images of children on the device. which there wasn't loads, but there was a few which obviously raised my concerns even more. There was lots of pictures of the victim. Some were indecent, but could, if someone else had viewed it and didn't know the whole background, would have thought that it was nothing, if that makes sense, that he was just taking pictures or of normal sort of things. But for me, it still wasn't sitting right. And then it was about a year later, in January 2023, that a colleague of mine had an investigation where he was a suspect again, but it was transferred from another force.
Right.
And he was a suspect, and it was for engaging in sexual activity with a child online. And she had done some searches and also seized a device off him. She asked if I would grade the device because she wasn't grade trained. And I was like, yes, because I was like, there's something not right with the job that I've got. I know there's more to it. And I graded his phone and found thousands more indecent images of children, and found videos of him raping my victim and my victim's sister, which was awful. I get emotional.
Bless you.
Yeah, it was a great. And then there was also hundreds of other online victims.
What happened next after you found that material on his phone?
Well, along with that, I found that there was hundreds of online victims, and I realised that the investigation was bigger than for me just to handle by myself. Obviously, now we'd got a lot of evidence against Mr. Brock that he'd been obviously sexually abusing his girls and obviously inciting hundreds of girls online to engage in sexual activity. So I escalated to my boss thinking, help, yeah. I can't deal with this alone.
Yeah.
So then that's when it became Op Parallel, and a team was put together with some amazing officers that basically we worked long hours to get basically ready to arrest Brock. He wasn't arrested straight away because we needed enough evidence and we needed everything put together so that when we did arrest him, he wasn't coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that he'd already got bail conditions from my previous interviews with him. So we knew that safeguarding was already in place. So we knew that he wasn't able to be near these girls, that he still had access to online devices, so he still could have, he had access to devices and still could access online,
mm-hmm.
but he had bail conditions in place for that time being. So we knew we had a tiny bit of time to get ready. And then obviously on the 7th of February, he was arrested in the early hours. And by 4 p.m., he was remanded and charged with 13 offences. And they were just the contact offences and indecent images. We knew that we had more to come, but
mm-hmm.
that was what we had for now. He obviously was remanded. And then a couple of weeks later, he pleaded guilty at court for those 13 offences. A week after him pleading guilty, he then was rearrested in prison and brought back to the station to be interviewed with the further online offences. And after that, he was then charged for a further 14 offences.
Wow.
So we had 27 offences altogether, which was considering at the beginning, we just had a couple of offences which weren't solid, and then to then have 27 was amazing, like absolutely amazing. And the CPS were great. They were really good and worked with us, and it was really good to get that result. After that, he obviously, I've already said about him pleading guilty.
Yes,
to the
you
second
have,
lot.
Yeah.
So it was great. all of our hard work paid off. It was like a feeling of relief that he was finally, we had something on him, mm-hmm. because he had, Brock had previous investigations before this come about involving children, and they were all, there was no further action on any of them. So there was that element of finally we've got him.
Yeah.
Like, and it was kind of like we felt justice for all the victims, even the ones previous, that it was probably true that what he's done to them, the previous investigations, but we could never prove it. It was amazing feeling.
And what was he like as a person? What was he like in interview?
Cold. Yeah. He spoke in the first couple of interviews, but then obviously once all the evidence was put to him, he went no comment. But he was cold. There's just no emotion. There was nothing, no remorse. Nothing there. You just think that someone's done this sort of thing to these victims. You would show something. He wasn't even anxious or shaking or knowing he's going to prison for a long time. Nothing.
No.
No.
And you spoke about the hundreds of online victims. Just tell us a little bit about what he was doing there, how he was, speaking to these young girls. What was happening there?
So he would, I want to say hunt for them, because he would scroll through TikTok and find, he had a criteria of things he would search. Like he would search for girls doing handstands or cartwheels. It was very much weird things that he would search for. And then he would message them and say, I can make you TikTok famous. He's like, if you do these following things, I can get you thousands of followers. So then he would then add them on Snapchat, because obviously Snapchat, sometimes you can't see the messages once you've sent them.
Mm-hmm.
So he obviously knew that. And he was sending them, he had a script that he sent to most of his girls. And it would be like, you need to do this. And it would be like, number one, you need to like send a picture of you naked. Number two, you need to send a picture of you with no clothes on, inserting things into your private parts. But obviously they were a bit more graphic than that.
Mm.
And these girls were like, the youngest was, I think we found out, was 8.
Wow.
And that's just like, that's horrific. Like that. Also, these girls have obviously got access to TikTok and Snapchat when they, at this age, they shouldn't do. But he would send this script to them and they would be vulnerable and think, yeah, okay, and send him stuff back. And then he would then buy followers. So he would pay for followers and put them onto their accounts for them. So, and then obviously they would then tell their friends, look how many followers I've got. And then it was literally a cycle of that happening all the time. And he would end up doing video calls with them and them doing things, sexual acts for him. And he would record them and then he would share this to other paedophiles. So he was like a prolific offender, like a really high scale paedophile. I always think that if we didn't have catched him now, what else was he capable of? He was so young. Like, what else has he done? What else he could do in the future? It was bad. He used social media and he preyed on the vulnerable. He picked girls that he knew that would do this stuff for him.
Yeah. So tell me what it was like when the judge said those words, 32 years. What was the atmosphere like? How did everybody feel?
I think everybody was shocked because it's a big sentence. And after, obviously, his percentage off, it was crazy. Like, and I remember looking around behind me at the other officers and the SIO, Susie Hine, and I was like, gobsmacked. I really was.
Mm.
And the victim's mum was holding my hand and she was just like squeezing it. And then, but he didn't, like, Brock was like nothing, showed nothing. And like the judge said, he was a predator. That's what he is. And he deserves to go to prison for a very long time. And that's what he got. So it felt amazing. And as we left the courtroom, I got really emotional because I felt like it was just the end. And I cried. And the victim's mum hugged me. And obviously she was quite teary. And she said, whispered in my ear, I couldn't have done it without you. And then I cried even more. But I was trying not to cry because obviously this is your job. You're trying to put on a brave face for the victim and the victim's family. But yes, we're police officers, but we're still human. We still feel things that everyone else does. And we have to see things that not everyone should have to see, but we do it for a good cause and we do it for a good reason. And
absolutely,
this was one of those times where all what I'd seen and what we'd done was worth it.
Absolutely. And so going, talking about what Brooke did in messaging these girls on social media, do you have a message for parents or guardians who may be listening to this and, you know, may have children themselves?
I think that parents should think about what they're giving their children the phone for to start off with and how old they are. Like, if they're really young, do they need a mobile phone? And to make sure that on them, if they do give them a mobile phone, that they've got restrictions on that phone and that parents are open, honest with their children and say, well, this is your phone is for this. However, I'm going to be checking it, or just being very much like, they want to know what's on the phone and what they're doing with the phone. And it sounds like strict parenting, but it's to keep their children safe. And I even now, to this day, my sister's she's in her teens and I check her phone all the time. She hates me for it, but I'm protecting her. So, and I know deep down that I've done that, so she's fine. Like, I know what she's up to. And I think that's what parents should do. And if their children are asking for all these TikTok, Snapchat apps, wait until they're older, until they understand how to use it and what it's for. And they need to be aware of the risks that these social media platforms present. They're awful in some aspects. I don't agree with them. I don't agree that children should have them at a certain age. Mm. I do know that TikTok and Snapchat are working on their safety and their privacy settings and everything like that. So I think you have to be a certain age. But yeah, I definitely think that they should talk to their children about the phone, about what they're doing with it before they have it.
Absolutely. And what can parents do if they're worried about who their children might be talking to, or if they have some concerns, like we said earlier, perhaps they've checked a phone and there's something on there that doesn't seem quite right. What can they do?
They can call 101. And if they think that it's something urgent, call 999. They'll always refer you to somewhere else if it's not urgent.
Yeah.
But they can also do online an online report. We're always here to give advice. I know there's people in the control room that they've got a wealth of knowledge of this sort of thing as well, so they can give advice to parents if it's not made to a criminal offence, if it's not got that far yet. But that's a good thing because you want to stop it before it gets that far. So yeah, just call in. We're always here to help.
Thank you for listening to CAMS Cops, Our Stories. If you or someone you know has been affected by the issues raised in this episode, help and support is available. For more information, visit the force's website, www.cams.police.uk.